You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works. This is episode 99 of the Common Good Podcast with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature Lee's conversation with Jay Moses, pastor of Hope Church in Wheaton, Illinois, on how a local church invites in multiple faiths to influence one another.
What happens when a mostly white, suburban, Christian congregation invites in teachers, leaders, or elders from other religions to teach their faith from the pulpit and share in projects together? Is this an expression of God's peaceable kingdom? Well, stay with us to hear how a white pastor and congregation have worked to develop mutually beneficial relationships with Sikhs, Jews, African Americans, Native Americans, and Muslims.
Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. This story today, or this interview today, really intrigues me a lot, well, for a couple different reasons, but I'm just so impressed that in a local congregation, this in-depth kind of interfaith activity is going on with the intention of this mutual benefit that I referred to already. So the want to say in introducing this episode that the story of different faiths, you know, really can't tell it without speaking of how some have faiths have split from others, and there's been lots of animosity as a result. Well, to this day, armed battles often happen along the lines of division between faiths. Though all faiths teach love, the practice of love is too weak to overcome cultural and political differences that tear them apart. That's certainly true in lots of cases. At the same time, it's equally true that the story of different faiths cannot be told without speaking of how love transcends differences and solidifies united actions for justice, for peace, and the common good. Well, this larger story of how faith differences divide, but just as surely how they come together in ways that transform people, societies, and the faiths themselves, is the focus of this podcast. And the fact that it can happen in a local congregation is what I continue to want to emphasize. Well, that's what you're about to hear as I interview Jay Moses, pastor of Hope Church, a Presbyterian congregation in Wheaton, Illinois. Interviewing Jay was special for me since I pastored Hope Church between 1989 and 1999. Just to say a little bit more about Jay, he did his early studies in his home state of California. He earned a dual bachelor degree in biblical studies and clinical psychology at Azusa Pacific University, followed by a master's in divinity at Fuller Theological Seminary, and there he had an emphasis in Christian origins. He received a doctor in ministry at Northern Seminary, that's a Baptist school in Lombard, Illinois, and that was in the areas of liturgical studies and worship renewal. And then he also has received a master's in theology from the Catholic Theological Union in Hyde Park on the south side of Chicago. And the emphasis then was on interreligious dialogue, specifically in Islamic studies. Well, he's been in professional ministry for over 20 years, serving at several congregations in the Southern California area before moving to the Midwest to the First Presbyterian Church of Wheaton in 2004 as pastor of congregational ministries over the primary areas of education and mission. He served First Presbyterian as head of staff briefly on an interim basis, and then has been also on staff at Chicago Presbytery as the Muslim Relation Coordinator in reaching out to the Islamic community. He's currently the moderator of the Ecumenical and Interreligious Work Group at Chicago Presbytery. He met his wife, Sherry, in the choir at Azusa Pacific University. She teaches in an elementary school and is a reading specialist. Although she lived the majority of her life in Orange County, California, she was born in Pella, Iowa. That's my hometown as well. Jay and Sherry have two children, Haley, 13, and Connor, 11. So that's about my introduction to you all of Jay Moses, and let's move now to the previously recorded interview.
I'm sitting here in the office at Hope Presbyterian Church in Wheaton, Illinois, with Pastor Jay Moses, and this is kind of a special moment for me because I used to sit in this office as pastor, but now I'm in just the greatest appreciation, I would say admiration of many of the things that Jay is doing, especially in the area of interfaith, connecting with different groups. And welcome, first of all, Jay, to the Common Good Podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here. We're both in the same office. It's very good to be here with you.
Yeah, it is nice. And so let's, what is this? Let's just start with why? What is this about Jay Moses that likes to do interfaith ministry or interfaith outreach and relationship?
That's something I've tried to understand my whole life as well, as people ask me that. Sometimes your family knows you better than you are, and they can sum you up. Mm-hmm. I have a great respect for my stepfather, who is a United Methodist chaplain. And he came when I was installed, and he just got up and simply said, you know, Jay's always been a curious person. Mm. And I am a curious person of other cultures, and that's always been an enriching part of who I am, how God made me. But I tend to take in all that God has created and the environment around me. I love to examine it. I think there's a common thread in everything. So kind of refine yourself as you find other people.
So you came to this congregation whose numbers had fallen to under 100 in membership. And almost immediately, I think, you began to bring in the voices of other faiths. Do you remember the first one that you brought in?
Gosh, the first one I brought in, trying to remember when I came here, the summers I preach on the Torah.
Okay.
And so maybe the first one that came in was the Jewish folks, the Jewish community. So I know we probably had three rabbis preach that summer. And some folks from the Jewish Federation and the AJC and some folks came in and sang the liturgy and things. So
AJC, just
American Jewish Council.
Okay.
A little bit more progressive social issues and things like that. But just, I had the, I would think that one of the greatest assets I had in coming to Hope is that I had been in the community for about 12 years before I came here. So I had the opportunity to have built relationships and to call on those relationships to come in. Whereas if I had gone into, been called into a city in Nebraska, I would have to rebuild all those relationships, which is, I think, the call of a pastor in our day anyway. Mm-hmm. But I have the opportunity to call on deep relationships I've had.
Yes, I can see why that would be a huge advantage, because you move to a different situation, but you know the community, so you have those relationships going. So three different rabbis, that was sort of the thing that happened that first summer, and that just fit in right in with your preaching from the Torah. And then do you remember the next one that came in?
Well, it's kind of funny, and the people here are very merciful with me. But I mean, it kind of all came in at the same time. So, so the Muslim community was immediate. I tell folks, I relate with the Jewish community in many ways because it's a part of my faith. Mm-hmm. I learn about my own faith when I'm with Jewish folks and study the text. I am in relationship with Muslims because I want a future for my children. And so there's a desire that we need to be in a peacemaking relationship with Muslims, and the best of both traditions come together. So there were so many, there were a few catastrophes, tragedies that occurred at that time. I'm trying to remember if it was France, where there were some shootings, and every time there was something that was associated with jihadism, maybe, or radicalism, I would call in Muslim friends from the community to come in to worship and be in prayers with me and pray with me. So they were there, I would say, even more so. We have a Peace Sunday here where we have it outside by the tree. It's not here anymore, the tree, but and it's near 9/11. So every 9/11, we have had the Muslim community here with us. So they were in there right away, too, as far as the Muslim community.
And when you say pray with you, it's one thing if you sit in the sanctuary and pray together. It's another thing, were they praying in the liturgy, in the worship time?
Well, there's two ways to answer that. We have services from time to time, which are open services where Muslims lead prayers.
Okay.
We have a prayers of the people here where people just get up and stand. It's very free flowing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I had them come up and I'd ask him to pray. Absolutely. It was spontaneous, mm-hmm. I guess is what I'm saying. Cause you never knew what was going to happen. You still don't mm-hmm. in our world. And so mm-hmm. having colleagues and friends that you can call on and say, I need you in this worship space on Sunday cause I need to pray with you. Mm-hmm. So yes, they would lead prayers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I worked in interfaith stuff for a long time at a larger level, and I'm to the point where I feel like we cannot externalize our religious friends, but the biggest barrier to cross is to have them sit with us in worship, okay. in respect.
Okay. All right. I'll just keep going with the sequence a little bit. So we've now identified the Jewish participation and relationships, the Muslim relationships, and how it makes so much sense that you, any time there's been an issue that arises in the news, it was a time where we needed to come together, and how much you've, I didn't know about the worship you had created around 9/11. That's such an excellent commemoration, it seems to me. Which group, other group came next, or another group that you're working with anyway?
Well, let's see. I've been adopted into an Ojibwe tribe
mm-hmm.
up near Lake Superior. I'm Californian, so I still have to think about which lake's what. Up in northern Wisconsin near Ashland. So immediately I had my brother come down here and introduced him to the folks here at Hope and start to teach us on native ways and, mm-hmm. and all that is associated with that. So he preaches from the pulpit and mm-hmm. has come down, and they've had dancers here, traditional dancing at the church. I mean, we just do a lot of things. I think of worship as just a powerful experiential thing for people to encounter others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different mentality than it's a place where we separate and do our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and then we have a Sikh Gurdwara across the street, and so they are our closest of any religion,
mm-hmm.
Of Christian or anything. They are our closest neighbors, so I immediately went over there, and they've come over here and shared their music, and one of the traditions here started by you was, it developed into this, is to do things with a church on the south side, which happens to be African-American, mm-hmm. Hope Church of Inglewood. And there's a tradition here of having a picnic with them mm-hmm. in the summertime. So when I came here, you know, we learn about the south side of Chicago and concerns of the African-American church by going there. But I was concerned that they didn't learn about our struggle in the suburbs. And our struggle in the suburbs is to break the grip of what, I don't want to call it white supremacy, but just white dominance
mm-hmm.
or the way things have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started to have a diversity picnic. So now not only does Hope Chicago come, so we have this wonderful fellowship across racial lines, but we have the Sikh community here, the Muslim community here, the Turkish Muslim community here. We have all sorts of folks that visit on that Sunday. And it's a powerful moment
mm-hmm.
To be together. And I don't know. It's part of my beliefs that God does place something within us that resonates with others.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is, I think it's just so special that you're figuring out a way to do this. Well, I don't know if that's even the right way to say it. You're just doing it. I don't know about figuring it out, but you're just doing it here in, you know, in a local congregation, and one that has you have a wonderful diversity statement when you come into the congregation about the open, being open, and I know that the church went through quite an issue, I guess, to write that statement regarding gay and lesbian, LGBT, I don't know how many, I don't get all the letters right.
LGBT.
Thank you. And then add Q on it,
right,
too. and that was
touching certain families in a particular way, and you've just taken that and into so many additional dimensions of diversity. And but maybe we need to say a word about the context here for people listening who don't understand DuPage County. Why don't you describe a little bit? You've lived here at least as long as I have, I think.
15 years I've been here. I'm a Californian, but I've been here 15 years. Well, gosh, I mean, this is all my neighbors, but, you know, I come from California, which is, you know, I know there's like 120 languages spoken in the Anaheim School District. Mm-hmm. So coming here, it's much more monolithic, mm-hmm. and good folks, but this is a Republican area. It's mm-hmm. It's changing a little bit, but when I came here, that was that, and there's nothing wrong with that. Obviously, it's Wheaton, so you have Wheaton College influence here, and you have a lot of churches, a lot of white churches.
Yeah.
And so there's that dynamic here, and you know, there are friendly forms of faith expression and evangelicalism. I'm from Fuller Seminary, I'm from Azusa Pacific. I think they're a friendly form of evangelicalism, mm-hmm. and there are times where Wheaton does that as well. You know, when I came here, I just thought, churches that are able to do this. Some churches are really trying to make a difference by writing statements. Mm-hmm. And I really think the biggest thing is to try and put flesh on the bones. Mm-hmm. And the biggest issue is not whether you say you are open to being with a Muslim or a Sikh person or a Jewish person, but actually to encounter them and share relationship with them. Encountering is the great frontier for the white church in our day, is mm-hmm. to actually be with people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just, I think, a lot of genius that you have about this, out of this curiosity that you describe from your ancestry that they observed in you, and then how this has led to these very practical forms. Because, and you say an important word, you know, the white church, and there's many, many forces in the country right now who seem to believe that at least there should be white dominance in terms of who sets the direction of our country. So in the context of all of that, too, to work with that in the way that you're working with it seems really very prophetic. I just think that there may be other congregations, if this doesn't scare the bejesus out of them, to think of doing this, might benefit from just hearing that this has been possible for you to do. We may be leaving out some things that, as you think about this, are really important in the way that this is coming about, how you handle people who are uncertain about whether this is such a good thing. What are some of the joys? Do you have any transforming experiences? People who are just saying, wow, my eyes, my heart is being opened. I don't know if you have stories like that at this point.
We'll return momentarily to Lee's conversation with Jay Moses. In the last podcast, we initiated a new feature that you'll hear in most episodes. After we've heard our guests, we'll give a common good feature. In just 3 to 5 minutes, the feature will highlight the work of some person or organization that is clearly pursuing the common good over personal privilege, advantage, or gain. Today we'll feature the Brown Berets. Be sure to listen following each guest. And yes, please tell us what you think of this new idea, the common good feature. Now let's return to the conversation with Jay Moses.
What are some of the joys? Do you have any transforming experiences? People who are just saying, wow, my eyes, my heart is being opened. I don't know if you have stories like that at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the small things. As a pastor, you know, you try and create programs that will facilitate encounter. They don't always work well because everybody's culture is different, so it's hard to get to land at the same place. But I believe in a theology of overlap, which means we have an I didn't mention this. We have an African American church that meets on this hill with us, which is just a gift to us, and that's changed us. I notice people in between the services will sit down and have a cup of water together, and they just talk to each other. It's just like, I mean, to use the gospel, just Jesus and the Samaritan. It's regardless of Jesus and the Samaritan, who they are, they sat and talked to each other. And just in that moment of domestic normalcy was powerful conversation. So I notice a lot of members around the church, and they'll tell me stories that are just that, like that. They were wandering in and this person was here. We have a sick community that meets in the church on Friday nights for their children. So there's about 20 Sikh kids here, learning their tradition, learning their language, learning their literature, and learning their music. Music's really important to Sikh people. And one of the elders on leadership in our church wandered in here on a Friday night. You know, this Friday night, nobody's here, to grab something. And you walk in, and you're literally walking into the Punjab. I mean, and the colors, the smells, the children... you know, I'll just say it this way. The white church is struggling to survive, and they've been losing members. The answer is open your doors.
Yeah. Okay.
And stop seeing and encounter people, because the church will fill. But it's not going to fill in the way it did in the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the same way. So I hear stories from people who wander in, and then in our Bethel New Life is an African-American church meets with us. They'll run in there, and they'll hear that rhythm. They'll hear that. I mean, they'll hear gospel singing coming out of this church, and boy, that's powerful to be with them in that moment. So I believe in a theology of overlap, which is you just get the doors open, and then people are going to wander in and out. You're not gonna be able to control it, mm-hmm. but you can try and facilitate some overlap. And those have been the powerful moments. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, I love it. And I just want to just reinforce how it's also very obvious to me that the people of what we understand of as church, you know, is changing. If it's going to survive, it's going to be a way different kind of experience than the gathering of people, you know, homogeneous groups. And so certainly the tendency is to think of white church, black church, and then it sort of stops there. And white church and black church basically haven't gotten together very well. And in a sense, the diversity has to be preserved. And so far it seems like, I mean, I think it has to be preserved, because it's each one is so rich. The culture, the black culture is so rich. But to bring them together, I think, like you're doing, has a lot to commend it. I'd like to know a bit about, you're talking about a theology of overlap. I mean, are you speaking, teaching this kind of theology? Kind of what's a key, I don't know, whether you point to some key biblical stories or anything as you try to articulate this theology that is kind of part of what you are bearing witness to.
I would say I'm learning the theology of overlap. I've done interfaith work, racial work, academically, and in a structural way. And when you get in a local grassroots community, you can attempt to intellectually talk about it. You can attempt to make programs, but people are free, and they have different time schedules or different cultures. They have different things going on. And what I guess my best one that I mentioned was Jesus and the woman at the well, which is used for all sorts of things. People mm-hmm. talk about that. Mm-hmm. But all I would say is it's a moment of surprise encounter. Mm-hmm. That's it. So there's lots of moments of surprise encounter with Jesus. And even places the Syrophoenician woman where he gets schooled, right? Mm-hmm. And he learns. Mm-hmm. And it's a surprise. And from my perspective, my context, that's a gospel moment. It's a moment of transcendence and seeing things in a different way. So, I mean, just opening the doors, and the doors being the doors of worship on Sunday morning, opening the doors of the church. I know lots of folks, you know, I've been around the block, you know, and folks will say, well, you shouldn't rent to folks. You shouldn't have people in the church who don't accept Jesus as, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. You got to stop thinking that way, because mm-hmm. it's not found in the gospel. Mm-hmm. He's just wandering around, and the churches have got to open their doors. There were two things. There were three engines at this church that existed before I came here. They had a relationship with an African-American church on the South Side that promoted encounter. They've had a relationship with a church in Cuba mm-hmm. which is has shown the difference in politics in some ways, but also ethnicity. And then they have a relationship with the soup kitchen in Wheaton. Mm-hmm. And those three engines, when I came, allowed the conversation. And those are things that churches can attempt to do, cross-cultural trips, mission trips to cross-cultural, in ethnicity, in politics, and those things, prepares the way to have some comfort level in the vocabulary you use. Mm. But the second level, which happened here, was, and again, this happened because I've been in the community, is just I opened the doors. And these are not interfaith people. These are your neighbors. Mm. So when people would ask me, well, this person's Muslim, well, they're my friend. Mm. Invite your friends to our community on Sunday morning. Mm. Doesn't matter what religion they are. Invite them here. They'll tell you if they want to be here or not. And the church is open. Mm. Another thing we did here with the ascendancy of the current administration, because we're a white church and we're Presbyterian, we talk really well about being inclusive. Mm. And we write good documents and say, but the challenge is that class-wise, we will never know when things that are negative happen to other people that are not of our class, social class, or religious background. So we created something called Voices of Hope from our leadership to train our leaders to be servant leaders, horizontal leadership, which means we go out into the communities and the people that would be hurt the most first, we listen to. So we meet almost every 3 months with a gathering, and around that gathering in our sanctuary are Muslim, Jewish, Sikh, Latino, African American, lesbian, also Mormon, all sorts of people, Taiwanese, and they talk to us. And we, as being a history of being the ones in control and in our social class, it's very easy. I watch what's going on in the news and I say to my wife, none of this affects me. Mm. My life's going to get better. Nothing's going to affect me. I'm not going to be stopped from going where I want to go. And I'm not going to get stopped from, you know, everything's going to work. My taxes are going to be better. Is that what faith communities are about? Mm. So an exercise in religious traditions that have had dominance, at least for the one I'm in, is to listen to the least of these, mm-hmm. and to flip-flop it like at least Jesus told us to do. So Voices of Hope is something we do to train our leaders to be sensitive to doing these kinds of things of overlap, and that's a major overlap. We learn all sorts of things about that.
That just practically gives me chills, that Voices of Hope is that listening session, that just listening to what minorities in a community of whiteness are experiencing. And of course, the whole whiteness thing is changing. I mean, there are some areas of the country that where white is no longer dominant in terms of population, but still, in many cases, dominant in terms of decision making. This is just again, I've talked with you in this way, Jay, your postings to Facebook and the other things I see have so much more depth to them. And I'm so appreciative of what I'm learning. And I just want to say to anyone listening to this podcast that if there are questions that come up for you because this intrigues you, why, in the show notes or written introduction to the podcast, if you'll permit some kind of contact information, Jay, sure. Yes, and he's nodding his head yes, we'll make it so that you can contact Jay and contact him directly and ask him further questions about this very rich witness of faith that is going on, a witness of faith that really speaks to our situation that just comes up every week. Every week there are so many situations that come up again, my great applause for what you're doing. It's about time to wrap this up. Are there anything else that you would like to say around this, the progression of this work, or where you hope, are there some other unfinished things, some things that you can see you'd also like to add into the mix of this work of overlap and interfaith?
It takes time. I'm just realizing faith leaders of faith communities it used to be that you served a certain amount of time, then you take off or you end up going somewhere. It takes time to plant roots in a community, to be trusted and to realize the angles of how communities feel. We need indigenous, we need plants, religious leaders who plant in communities to understand the way things go. And this is a work in progress at Hope. And I could just say to all my white church friends, I'm white, and there's lots of good things about, you know, my background stuff. Yeah, there's lots of folks out there that are looking for hope, a place to do this. Mm-hmm. They sense the change in the culture, mm-hmm. and they want to do something proactive about it. And it won't be, perhaps, unfortunately, the majority of you, but there are pockets of light mm-hmm. and voices of hope. And I would encourage churches and faith communities to just simply be like... How the Irish Saved Civilization. Go read that. Mm. How do you preserve something that's really valuable? And I think we're in a time where that's needed. Mm. So anyway, that's my wisdom as we close here.
Thank you so much. This is the Common Good podcast, and I think what you're talking about, I know what you're talking about, really addresses how a local congregation can make an enormous contribution to the common good. So thank you so much, Jay, for being part of this.
Absolutely. And I'm glad for the work you did here, Lee. So I'm just walking in your footsteps.
And oh my goodness, he's making tracks that I could never have made. And so it's just wonderful, wonderful to see. All right. So that wraps up this particular interview with Jay Moses at Hope Presbyterian Church in Wheaton, Illinois. And thank you for listening.
You've been listening to the second half of Lee's conversation with Jay Moses on the importance of having multiple faiths influence one another in local congregations. Well, Lee, Rita and I had a wonderful experience recently. We visited the Aztec Festival up north of us in Salinas, California. And there, besides seeing so many beautifully dressed indigenous peoples dancing and making music, I met a representative of the Brown Berets. And so Michael told me about what they're doing, and I was really impressed. The Brown Berets started in East Los Angeles back in the 60s, I think. I knew of them, I think, at that time, or in the 70s, as La Causa. And they now have chapters, you might call them, in various places in the United States. They have chapters in Salinas and also in Watsonville, and they do wonderful things to maintain indigenous peoples' cultural and spiritual traditions. They're completely dedicated to nonviolence, so do not confuse these people with people making trouble in the streets in violent ways. They're hardworking, and they... work to maintain the traditions of indigenous peoples, and that can be, you know, people who are known as Hispanics, Native Americans, but this is true of both of North America and South America. I understand you've had some experience with the Brown Berets also, Lee.
Not a personal experience, but I know that they were active here in San Diego in the creation of Chicano Park. And that's a wonderful commons space. It was going to be a space taken over by the a building for the State Highway Patrol, but through some activism, and the Brown Berets were a part of it, this park... has become a strong expression of Chicano resistance and Chicano power. I like this example in our Common Good feature because it really comes from the bottom up, and it's hard to create. This isn't the same as creating a common space of the national park someplace where it comes in through the government action and all. This is a group of people who are oppressed and excluded in a number of ways, and they figure out a way to help create common space that's good for not only them, but for everyone in the community. So that's why I like this particular feature for the common good.
And the indigenous peoples are well known for, you know, their respect for the earth and not buying into the multi-earth paradigm where we can pretend like that we have more than one earth to live on. So I salute the brown berets. Well, have you listened to our other recent podcasts? In mid-July and early August, we've hosted John Deere telling why and how peace and nonviolence are stronger than chaos and violence, which are continually used by people and governments in power. In mid-August, we heard from Grace Jerry and her personal story of how global Christian missionary work moved away from its participation in the imperialist and colonial actions of European countries and their churches toward the liberation work of working side by side with locals in whatever country and church hosting a U.S. missionary as a guest. Well, do listen. We're sure that you'll pick up thoughts that you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Please also subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, the Common Good podcast, Simple Living Works podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as Non-Conform Freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good podcast and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Time to wrap up this episode. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we'd like you to know. Please subscribe to our Jubilee Economics, One Earth, and Simpler Living Works blogs. We post new nearly every week, so if you're a subscriber, you'll be told when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blogs through our websites. You can also subscribe to the Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works Podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the Common Good Podcast and Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.